Welcome back to the Goldmine Podcast. This is Pat Prince, editor of Goldmine. This episode will have as a guest Andy Curran, who is bassist for Coney Hatch. And Coney Hatch will be releasing a live album for Record Store Day Canada this year. And it is called Postcard from Germany. It was released last year, but it's going to be its first time on vinyl. And we're going to have with Andy Noble Musa, who is the sales and marketing exec for Microform. And Microform pressed this piece of vinyl on a nice splatter design that matched the cover art. And we'll talk to both of them about this release and its significance right after this message.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Okay, so let's go from the beginning. How did this all set up with Record Store Day? I know, Andy, this is the first time. It's a long time coming, huh? Never had anything out for Record Store Day. And it's a first-time vinyl product. Maybe you could tell how it all came together.
Well, yeah, this is definitely the first time for Coney Hatch to be involved in a Record Store Day capacity. And you know, obviously, I'm a fan of Goldmine Magazine. I know, Pat, what you do, and I'm an avid vinyl collector. So it's a bit of a bonus to be not only have our record come out on vinyl for Record Store Day, but to be talking to you at Goldmine Magazine, because you guys are all about legacy. You're all about vinyl. I still have my vinyl collection from when I started at Pat when I was 16. And have all of the Coney Hatch records, but we've never been involved with the Record Store Day. So this one kind of props up this release for us, the Postcards from Germany, and we've got a couple new songs on it. So I'm selfishly kind of happy that the world will hear that Coney Hatch is still alive and well. We're playing shows and we're in the studio and writing. But yeah, it's a pretty cool double whammy to get a vinyl release in 2024 with a band that started in 1982 and then be involved with Record Store Day and to be talking to Goldmine Magazine is awesome.
Now, Noble, you had a working relationship with Andy before, the Microform did?
Yeah, we worked with Andy on different projects in different capacities. But this is the first, obviously, Coney Hatch project that we work on. Very exciting stuff. And we were really excited to hear that they wanted to go with an effect record.
Yeah, I love the speckled vinyl. Looks amazing. Noble and his team did a fantastic job.
And it marries well with the artwork as well. It just came out beautiful.
Now, Noble, I want to ask you, as you notice that you're getting more requests for splatter vinyl, not just colored vinyl?
Yeah, it used to be when we first got into this in 2017, we started manufacturing vinyl. We noticed the trends early on. I'd say about it caught our attention in about 2014. And we started making plans to get into vinyl around 2016. By 2017, our first couple of lines were in the plant. We're up to seven pressing lines now. But we noticed the trend early on was black, 80% black, 20% color maybe.
Yeah.
It just flipped. It just went completely the other way, and now it's I would say 70% of our stuff is now color and effects, and you know maybe 30% is standard classic black.
I'm not sure it's ever gonna go back to black. I think
why would it? It's just so cool.
I really don't see it going back because
yeah, I don't see it either.
Now the collectors have the best of both worlds. They can get a used vinyl piece of, like an original pressing, right, on black, because it's probably mostly on black, and then get a reissue on colored vinyl. So they have the best of both worlds, you know, have one they could play and one they just keep on the shelf.
Yeah, for sure.
Totally. And the GM at Anthem Records, Andy Hawk, is also an avid vinyl collector. And I believe it was Andy Hawk that came up with the idea and said, why don't we do a color variant on Postcards for Germany for Coney Hatch and match some of the colors in the artwork? And Noble mentioned that. So I think we picked the turquoise and sort of the I would almost call it a cream combination. And I have to say, it's selfishly, like, I've got a lot of vinyl. That one might be the coolest looking vinyl that I have in my collection. I've got a lot of colored ones. We did some Rush stuff back in the day that was on red vinyl. But there's something about the way this one turned out, Noble. I think you guys knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, the colors just mesh well together. The cream and the turquoise, you would never think to put those two together on a record, but they turn out beautiful.
Now, Andy, this is on Anthem Records, correct?
It is. So this one's a bit of an interesting one, Pat, because, it's only available in Canada. So people outside of Canada will have to get really adventurous and start looking on the nooks and crannies and where they can find it. But we were so impressed, the band, that we spoke to our merchandiser who runs our merch site. And we said, look, man, we should have this vinyl up for Coney Hatch fans all over the world. So anybody that's watching this interview, I think by the time it airs, you'll be able to go on to coneyhatch.com and be able to find it hopefully all over the world. Just have to pay that nasty shipping charge.
I think there'll be American fans that, if they live close to the border, they'll probably drive over. Say if they live in Buffalo, go to Toronto, something like that. I could see that happening. Yeah. Because, you know, Record Store Day is more than going to one store. So I could see them trying to check out what Record Store Day Canada is about. Have you ever compared the two? Have you gone one? Have you done a crawl like that, Andy? Gone from one record store to the other?
It's funny you said that, Pat. I've got I live in a very small town just west of Toronto called Oakville, and there's a friend of mine that has a really cool mom-pa record store called PVC. It's short form for Pop Culture Vulture, PCV. And he said, Andy, you should come by and you should see the excitement that happens with people on Record Store Day. So I drove by and with every intention to go in, Pat, and there was a lineup around the block to get into this record store. Yeah. So I never even got in, but you know, the collectors know, and Record Store Day does an awesome job of making a list of these titles, which, as both you guys know, when they're gone, they're gone. So then you're going to have to look on eBay to find them if you're not there the day of. But sadly, I haven't done the crawl, mostly because I didn't want to get up at 7 a.m. to line up, Pat.
Right. I feel you. Noble, is this your first record for Record Store Day? Have you done?
Oh, we've done others as well. We're a strong believer in the physical format. I mean, we manufacture not just vinyl. We're also into CD, DVD, and also we brought in cassette into our fold too.
Really?
We're into the highly collectible stuff, the customization, big on quality, big on hitting deadlines, and that's why it's attractive for Record Store Day titles, because you can't miss a deadline for record store date. You've got to have it in the distribution network in time, and it's a very stressful deadline to hit for some plants. And just us being so agile in the fact that we have everything under one roof. We just actually, Andy, you're going to geek out over this. The last time you were here, we didn't have it, but now we have a Neumann lathe on premise too. So now we're literally, we have the cutting of the master. We have the plating, which is the galvanics portion. We have the pressing. We have the printing of the jackets. We have the bindery and the packaging all under one roof. So end-to-end solution. And that's the kind of thing that makes us more responsive and able to hit deadlines. And that's why Record Store just keeps coming back to us and saying, you're going to do this one. Are you going to do this one?
I told the people at Record Store Day, I'm waiting for 8-tracks.
They're coming, Pat. But well, a quick point that I wanted to make, Pat, that you touched on when the guys in Triumph called me up and they asked, they knew that I had, I'll take my band hat off. I'll take my Coney Hatch hat off. And, you know, I've been working for since the early 2000s at Anthem Records and involved in a lot of the Rush Box sets, starting with the 2112, 40th anniversary of that. And that really caught the attention of Gil Moore and Mike Levine and Rick Emmett for Triumph. And they called me up and they said, Andy, you know, we really love the work that you did with Rush. Would you consider working with us on the 40th anniversary of Allied Forces? And it was a box set to celebrate the anniversary of that great record. So that's where I first met Noble and we first started working together. And that was a Record Store Day exclusive. And they were the ambassadors, the Canadian ambassadors. And that was a lot of fun to do that box set. But fast forward, I got to tour recently the facilities of Microform, and we were watching our record being made, you know, literally watching guys put speckled vinyl in and watching it be the stampers go down and watching the artwork being pressed and looking at the QC room and what Noble and his team have built out in Toronto is just a fantastic facility. And it was a thrill to be able to watch, you know, your record being basically pressed right in front of you. So talk about, you know, you record the record. We were in Germany. We recorded the record live, and then we did the studio tracks, and then full circle. You're sitting in a manufacturing plant watching your record being made, and that was really cool.
A lot of fun to have the guys over. It was a great day that day, Carl and Juan. It was just so much fun.
I got to say that one thing I love about Record Store Day is that the releases that have the smallest run, right? And your pressing plant does smaller runs, right? Is that correct, Noble?
We actually do the whole full gamut. I mean, we've had runs that were 50,000 plus. We do the small runs and the big runs. We've got 7 pressing lines. Our capacity is actually somewhere around 14,000 records a day. So we're agile enough to do both,
Yeah, because I like the small runs as a collector, because it's not just the value. It's, you know, being able to brag that you got this record and there were only, say, 500 made or 400 or 300 or whatever. Has kind of like a punk rock quality to it. You know, all those punk rock singles that were in the 80s. And I think that I like that you were able to press stuff like that. Not all vinyl pressing plants have that not only capability but are willing to do that. So
it's nicely in with what our model is, and our model is a highly collectible bespoke custom. And one of the things and when Andy was touring, we just had recently acquired additional equipment and resources to be able to do box sets in-house as well, and hardcover books, media books we call them. We brought that in as well so that we can even go even more customized. So we're going into that high end, very unique, you know, where we number in foil, and we, you know, we're going to that, just because there's just something about, and you know, we call them atoms, something about these atoms. And it's very different than the bits you get from Spotify and from, you know, the digital side. It's right. The physical is, you know what I sometimes compare it to? I compared this once before to it's like fast food. Like the Spotify is convenient, it's fast, it's affordable, it's, you know, it's your fast food. But if you want a fine dining experience, I mean, this is it. This is the fine dining experience of putting a record in that experience, and the beautiful artwork that's incorporated into the vinyl seems to. They did a wonderful job over at Anthem putting this package together, and this is what it's all about. It's that fine dining experience that I got.
Andy, I think as a bass player, you like the sound of vinyl, right? I mean, I always thought that for me, vinyl always has the bass always has a nice pop, a nice sound on vinyl.
I agree, Pat. One of the great things about vinyl is the capacity to be able to have that bottom end and that warmth translate to vinyl. As we've read, you know, CDs, some and certainly MP3s, they have that brittle quality sounding to them, sometimes very thin. So hearing these recordings translate over to vinyl, and I was very much, you know, had my fingers in getting the test pressing sent over, and we were really pleased. But selfishly as a bass player, absolutely, Pat, I love to know that the warmth translated and the bottom sounded nice and big. So working in the vinyl configurations is certainly rewarding for anybody that's into audiophile. I know people say, oh, you know, high-res audio, and those sessions were recorded at digitally on high-end, but high-res audio. But, you know, when you finally listen to them on vinyl, there's nothing better than that, man. And you can read the packaging. It's total old school. Brings me back to when I was like 16 years old, you know, leafing through the lyrics. And we've got, you know, Catherine McRae did the packaging on that Noble, and she's a great graphic artist. And we had a lot of fun with that. And it's something, you know, you look at the CD artwork, and then you even look at on Spotify, and it's that big. But there's nothing more rewarding than opening up the vinyl, and you're like, yeah, okay, this is how it was supposed to be, right?
Do you guys remember your first vinyl record purchased?
Well, you can go first, Andy. If you want me to go first, I remember the first one that I had in my hand.
And okay, you go first, and I'm going to think about my first 12-inch. I certainly know my 7-inch.
It's amazing because it was actually my mother, and you never think your mother's cool until she pulls something like this, and buried in her cupboard were these little 45 singles of the Beatles. And I remember those coming out, and we were all, as kids, like, wow, our mom used to be cool. It's like, I can't picture our mom as cool, but she used to be cool. Like, she used to buy these singles. Yeah, so that was the first time I touched, and I was a really young kid at the time, and it's just something that sticks with you that first time you know, can we play them?
Yeah.
Okay, so Pat, mine is nowhere near as cool as that, and guilty as charged on this one, okay? So my first piece of vinyl was a 7-inch, and I'm trying to think about my first 12-inch, but there was a store in Toronto, a chain of stores called Towers. It was basically like Walmart or Kmart or something like that. And in Toronto, we had a very influential radio station called Chum AM. And Chum AM was spitting out the hits. And you could go to Towers, and they would have the Chum charts, the top 20 Chum charts, and then they had a display with the 45 records, and you could go up and see which was number 1, 2, all the way to top 30, and you could go in and buy your 7-inch. So my sisters were big Beatles fans, but they were also big into bubblegum. And so I have to fall in the sword and tell you my first 7-inch was yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my by the Ohio Express. And I went out and got a 7-inch of it and framed it and put it in my studio. And then many years later, recorded a heavy metal version of it, which is up on Spotify now. It's like a very grungy version of Yummy Yummy. But I have a feeling, guys, that my very first 12-inch might have been Bachman Turner Overdrive, Not Fragile. Oh. And they were a very big band in Canada. Yes. And subsequently got Edgar Winter and Cheap Trick and Ted Nugent and Aerosmith and, you know, Rush and all of those records. But I think BTO, Not Fragile, might have been my first.
Well, I was going to say, you know, putting out a live album, Postcard from Germany, that's like, that's old school in itself, right? I mean, in the 70s, Frampton, you said Nugent, Cheap Trick, all those live albums were big.
They, you know what? And you mentioned a couple, like I wore my, Frampton Comes Alive, got to be one of my favorite all-time records. And I wore that one out, Pat. And there was something about that era of live music. I remember it kind of launched Kiss and Budokan with Cheap mm-hmm. Trick was another big one as well, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of Coney Hatch, I'll tell you that a lot of people have said to us that the band and the way we approach those songs, there's a certain ferocity to the live performance that might not be captured in the studio, very controlled, very polished, or some of them more polished than others. So we wanted to have something on the books representing our live show, which is just balls to the wall, two guitars, bass, drums, vocals. And that night in Germany, Carl Dixon pulled a fast one on us and said, "Hey, are you guys interested in recording?" And we were like, "Well, what's involved in that?" And he goes, "Oh, maybe we won't. Let's just pass on it." He went and got it recorded. And then after the show said, "By the way, guys, I didn't tell you, I didn't want red light syndrome. We actually recorded the show, right?" And I said, "Well, that's both good and bad, because we forgot to play Hey Operator, one of our most popular songs. So that's not going to be on the record." Yeah. But I do love certain live records, and Frampton Comes Alive certainly is one of my all-time faves.
Do you have a favorite track on this record that you did live?
I would. Oh, a live version, probably Wrong Side of Town. It's a bit of a, as I said, balls to the wall. It's the only song that I sang on the Friction record, but when it kicks in, man, it's like full pedal to the metal, Pat.
I think Monkey Bars definitely deserve to be at the end to close it, right? I mean, that was the first Coney Hatch song I think I ever heard. I'm trying to think if that was your first hit, but it was pretty big in America. That was the Coney Hatch song that kind of represented you guys in America, I think.
You know, it's really interesting, Pat, that you mentioned that, because, you know, Hey Operator and Devil's Deck was played on MTV, as well as First Time for Everything and a couple other tracks. But Monkey Bars, for some reason, became a fan favorite. Then it started to get bubble under and get some airplay. And guys like our friend Eddie Trunk at that metal show, and now Eddie's over at XM, has been a big, big supporter. And Monkey Bars, it's one of those tracks that, man, if we don't play that live, we're not getting out of that venue without somebody lynching us, you know? And so it's just become a staple, and I think it's kind of a bit of our underground cult, you know, song. So yeah, we had to end off with Monkey Bars.
I think it crosses over to like people who don't like or don't necessarily listen to hard rock like it. That's you know, that's anyway my impression. As far as Germany and Europe, are you always surprised how passionate those fans are compared to North America? I mean, it's especially with hard rock, heavy metal.
Yeah, absolutely, Pat. There's something really interesting about that market where, and I will term it as ageism, you know, in North America and Canada, in the US, the minute you get to be the age that I am now, people are kind of like, "Oh, those guys are old. They're classic, they're heritage, they're vintage, right? And what's we want Greta Van Fleet. We want something new. We want, you know." So you kind of, there's a whole stable, and you know, I'm sure Noble presses up a lot of records. Some of our friends, whether it's the guys in Honeymoon Suite or Gatto or Streetheart or some of these bands that were around, they were huge in the 80s. And kind of dismissed in the 90s and the 2000s, but in Europe, specifically Germany and in the UK, they love their bands till the day these guys die. You talk about Status Quo, or you talk about any of these bands like The Sweet or Rose Tattoo. It doesn't matter how old these bands are; they play in Europe, and they have legions of fans that love them. And when we went to Europe for the very first time, we could not believe the outpouring of love of these fans that hadn't seen us play in 30 years. And they, they love everything that we do. So God bless them. But you're absolutely right. They love their hard rock there.
And what always amazed me about Canada is there's some bands that are bigger in Canada than America. And it's like, well, Canada's right there. So it doesn't, like, yeah. You know, I hear about certain bands like the Guess Who being bigger, BTO being bigger, you know what I mean? And I always wonder why there was always a kind of a difference there. Did you always feel like you didn't get enough credit in America and always, no, but you always wondered about, like, why is there such a, that border really is like a musical border too?
Well, I think Noble might have some comments on this too, because I know he supports a lot of these artists to this day, but I can, you know, I don't know whether Noble agrees with this, but there's a certain mentality in Canada where the minute you're popular in another territory, whether it's Australia or Europe or the States, and if you can come back home and say, we just toured in the US or in Europe, people go, oh, wow, they really must be good if they're getting accepted over there. But meanwhile, you've been touring your ass off in Canada for decades. Don't wait a second. And Ray Daniels, who I used to work closely with, Rush's manager, would sometimes say to me, you know, sometimes in Canada, they eat their young. And despite the fact that we get a lot of support with Canadian content on radio and stuff like that, sometimes you need to go outside of Canada to prove yourself and then come back and we'll go, oh, yeah, okay, I guess they really are the real deal. I don't know. What do you think, Nova?
Well, it just brings back a tour that I had not long ago. I think it was about 2 months ago with a representative from a label in the U.S. And we had on press the Tragically Hip Live RSD edition. And it's pressing away and, you know, I'm presenting it. They didn't know who it was. And I was like, a bit of a shock. And it's like, okay, I get it now. America, US, but it does come as a bit of a shock that, that's something
that's like
popular here can be completely, obscure.
I wasn't aware how big Tragically Hip were in Canada. I mean, they're like, well, number one band almost.
Yeah. And then
here they were just like,
no idea who they are.
Yeah, a band that I liked, but they weren't Nirvana or Metallica, you know. But in Canada, they're huge. From what I hear.
Absolutely, they're arguably one of the biggest bands in Canada in every single pocket of our country. You know, Kim Mitchell's another one. Max Webster. I mean, Kim might as well run for political office here. He's like one of. You know, he's like the Prime Minister of Canada, but, you know, and radio kind of spilled in through upstate New York and through, Windsor and Detroit. But if it didn't spill any further than that, Pat, then suddenly you became a regional hit, meaning regional as in domestic in Canada. But, there's lots of arguments both sides. You can talk about Triumph breaking out of Texas or Rush breaking out of Cleveland, but then the flip side of the coin, what Noble just said, a band like Tragically Hip and unfortunately didn't resonate past the you know, sort of like New York, upstate, right. New York and Detroit, maybe a couple other pockets, right?
We always thought of them as, I guess I could just speak for myself, independent band, but, you know, in Canada, they're huge.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that happens because, let's face it, you know, Canada's right there. I mean, you know, it's kind of odd that there's this dichotomy at times. Now, speaking of that, a lot of times you have a lot of musicians from Canada playing with, you know, other Canadian bands, like even Carl Dixon, right? I mean, he played with Guess Who, you know, and he's in a band now called the Guess Who Alumni Band, right? Doesn't he perform with them, with Bill Wallace, the bassist and former bassist from Guess Who? So, it seems like a lot of fun. But
he's a busy guy, my bandmate. He's, he's constantly touring and he does a lot of speaking engagements because he was able to survive a very, very serious car accident. But you're right. The guys in Tuke, as for there's some Winnipeg guys that play in Slash's band.
Right.
So you get these Canadian musicians that pop up in different projects, you know, and it's kind of interesting to watch. I think we've got some of the, it must be in the drinking water here or something, Pat. We've got some of the finest musicians in the world.
Even though they might have to stop the Guess Who alumni because Burton Cummings pulling the ASCAP rights, but which to me is pretty odd, but whatever. So what's next for Coney Hatch? What's going to go on for Coney Hatch now?
Well, when we went to visit Noble, he offered us all part-time jobs.
Okay.
So once he saw me with the broom, he was like, man, this guy's pretty clean guy, right?
You're going to be postcards from New York?
Yeah. Actually, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up. Carl Dixon, my bandmate, said we should maybe continue the chapter, you know, postcards from France. And we've got a show. We've got a show coming up in France in September. We're going to do something called Firefest in Manchester, England in September. We've got a show booked in, speaking of cross border, we've got a show booked in Buffalo, New York. At the Riviera Theater in September. And the opening act is an all-female Iron Maiden tribute band called the Iron Maidens, which is kind of cool because we toured with Iron Maiden.
I know you did. I think I saw you with Iron Maiden, if I'm not mistaken.
So everything old is new again. And but we're kind of weekend warriors. Everybody's spread out over the country, and it's kind of like herding cats to get our band together. Yeah. So we do. A busy year for us, Pat, is, you know, six to 10 shows a year. So going to be busy with that.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And then I'll put in a little plug for my other project, which I'm working on with Alex Lifeson. And it's a project called Envy of None. Yeah. And we've got our second record about halfway finished recording. So I'm going to concentrate on wrapping up the recordings with Envy of None. And in a perfect world, that record will come out at the hopefully Q4 of this year.
Yeah, I was impressed with Alex's sound, the whole sound of the band. You know, because you went into territories you don't usually go into musically, right?
Very different from Rush and Coney Hatch. It's quite it's quite alternative, and it's at times very atmospheric. And we've got a female vocalist, Maya Wynn. It's quite a hybrid of sounds, but a huge departure for both of us. And we're having a lot of fun. It's kind of rewarding, Pat, to step out of your comfort zone and try to do something differently. Stylistically, so we've been having a lot of fun with Envy of None.
And Noble, what's the next record, the big record you're pressing?
Well, we're constantly many times. right now we're 24 hours 5 days a week, so it's pretty busy right now. Lots of stuff coming off.
Well, he's right. You do need people to work there. So.
And he's right. He is good with the broom too. Maybe a little curling. Do that on the side. Anyway, we've got.
That's a Canadian inside joke.
Forward to doing more albums with Andy. You know, hopefully, you know, we can participate in Envy of None on your other stuff and some of the other projects that you've got going.
Yeah.
Okay, have a great record store day. Let me know how it does, Andy, how the record does. If you, if you get to go to a record store, I don't know, you won't have to wait in line this time.
He's already in his car, so he just.
you know what I might do? I might try to pull a rock and roll tactic and say to my friend, look, if you want me to come to your record store day, I'll meet you at the back door.
Yeah.
I'll have a backstage pass and let me go through the back door one. So I don't.
That'll be a secret.
yeah. So I'll see if I can slide in. But you know, Pat, I wasn't joking, man. Like, people love collecting vinyl, and my friend said that they line up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they already in their mind have chosen what they're going to pick and what they're going to buy. But I'm going to do my best to try to get to a store at Record Store Day, and He called me up to tell me, my friend, that he had ordered some postcards from Germany, and he was quite excited about it. So it's really nice to see that people still care about the band after all these years, Pat.
Well, do you get to go out to Record Store Day and see your handiwork?
Funny thing, listening to Andy and his experience, first time buying records, etc. I wanted to mention this. My son goes to Record Store Day, it's something that's crossed the generation, and it's the younger kids are going out there and buying records. And actually, that's what piqued our interest. One of the things that piqued our interest in vinyl is seeing that next generation. Back in 2017, my son started collecting, and looking at him and his friends collecting records, and we saw the value, and they see the value in it, and we saw the value in this comeback and how it's bringing something to the mix that you just can't get on the cloud. So it's something that we're invested in, and I'm sure my son will be there, which is even great. It's better.
Well, thanks guys for your time, and I'll be talking to you post Record Store Day.
Excellent. Thanks.
Yeah. Pat. Yes. Thank you, Pat. Thanks, I really appreciate it. Take care.
All right, guys. Okay. Bye now.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.